This is Out and About on Peoria Public Radio. I'm Nathan Irwin.
And I'm Jen Gordon from Arts Partners of Central Illinois. We're talking with Scott Kanoff from the Bradley University Theater Department about their production of High Fidelity. Performances continue tonight through Sunday at the Hartman Center. Scott, thanks so much for being with us.
It is my pleasure.
Well, Scott, most people, when they hear the title High Fidelity, instantly they think of that cult classic film featuring John Cusack. Can you tell us a little bit about how the story works as a vehicle for the stage and as a musical?
The story is quite faithfully adapted for the musical. It's resolved in a slightly different way. What is really interesting is whereas the film has a very, very highly introspective narrator played by John Cusack, in the musical, the lead character, who's played by our senior Peyton McDermott, plays Rob Gordon, independent record store owner, has a lot of monologues directly to the audience. So whereas John Cusack in the film talked to the camera extensively, Peyton is our guide to his inner world and his life. And so we go from record store to other locations in his life. He's really our Virgil in this sort of underworld. And the story it matches the fantasy sequences on stage that the film featured. But the big difference, obviously, is music. And the key moments in Rob's journey are punctuated by pop songs. And each song is a different pop music genre. So you have a Pat Benatar number, you have an Aretha kind of number, there's a Percy Sledge R&B number. And throughout, you've got musical fills and riffs and songs in all manner of styles. There's Guns N' Roses, there's Outkast and Ludacris, Beastie Boys, everything from the Eagles and the Who to U2 and Coldplay. So it's a compendium of 90s music styles, up to and including about the year 2000, I would say. And what a lot of people don't know is that the film was adapted from a British novel by Nick Hornby, which was very popular in 1995. And the film not only transformed the idiom from fiction to film, but they brought it across the Atlantic very successfully. So our production, the musical opened on Broadway in 2006. It kind of fell between the cracks. I'm not really sure why, but there were a lot of other really big shows on that year. And it's had an itinerant life in colleges and small theaters around the country. I believe there's a production of it up in Chicago right now. But we're very excited. I think it's really right for the Bradley community. And I'm so far so good. We opened last week and the response has been terrific.
And for those who remember the film, the central character waxes rhapsodic a lot about music and about albums. And it seems that, and he's very obsessed with music.
He is, singularly obsessed with music, and particularly vinyl music. You know, he's a record store owner, and the guys he works with are equally obsessed. And the unfortunate characters who come in asking for music that is not judged by the staff to be worthy are asked to leave, not so politely. So these guys are real music geeks, and it costs Rob, his single-mindedness costs him his relationship. And his story is the tale of his efforts to get his girlfriend back. And in order to do that, he has to do some growing up. He's got to broaden his perspective a little bit and learn a few things. And he does so through real and fantasized encounters with customers, friends, and imaginary rock stars.
So we have a classic love story with all of these different musical styles available.
Exactly.
So it sounds like the perfect vehicle for a musical, and people could connect with a lot of different types of music.
I think so. And I think there's a generational appeal that really crosses some boundaries. We've got some, we have subscribers in their 60s and 70s who are really into the we go back to classic rock in this show and even Elvis era stuff. So there are people that are plugged into all different kinds of music. And then I think for 30 to 40 year olds, it has a particular appeal. My students all grew up in the 90s, so they're plugged into that music. And I think that, oddly enough, Nathan, we were talking about this earlier, our students are connected with 60s and 70s groups in a way that I think their parents probably aren't. There are groups along the way that different generations miss. But the Stones, the Beatles, Hendrix, Janis Joplin, people like that, our students are really into. There's a lot of other stuff that they don't know about.
Now, I'm curious if you had any obstacles sort of helping your younger actors get into the vibe of vinyl records and music stores, because 20 and 25 year olds today consume their music digitally and they buy it from iTunes. You know,
exactly.
They don't go into stores and deal with obnoxious clerks who
That's
judge
right.
your taste in music.
Or your friendly music store clerk who becomes your guide and knows everything and learns about your taste. You know, I loved going in music stores. I lived in music stores when I was in college, and I brought in fact, you can see them on stage, about 200 of my own LPs, which are primarily from the very late 60s and up to about 1975, 1980. And I brought them all in one day to show the students, and we had a record party. most of them had never operated a turntable. I also brought in my turntable, and because I haven't looked at my LPs in a long time. I don't routinely play them because I graduated to CDs too. I sort of drew the line at streamed music, but not completely. But the students were agog about these LPs. They just thought they were really cool. And some of them, you know, there are liner notes and booklets and a sheath of photographs that come with Sgt. Pepper's album. And I mean, there is a tactile feel. There's a whole gestalt to album listening. And I started sniffing my albums and, you know, that kind of sent my students around the bend a little bit. But for those of us who came of age at that time, it's a big deal. So they found it very cool, first in a novel way. And then we introduced them to some of this music that they weren't aware of. And stories like how when I was growing up, you'd hear that the new Beatles song was going to be played at 3 p.m. after school. And, you know, 40 kids would come to your basement. You'd turn on the radio and wait for it. And that connection mm-hmm. to music is something that the characters in the show have. They cut their teeth on pop music, and it's really their life. And I don't know what replaced that in subsequent generations. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I think my generation was the only one to have that connection with music. But the culture was changing, and it's a whole... It's a history lesson. It's a music lesson. It's for the students, anyway, in the show. So we had a good journey with them, and they had a great time.
And the setting of High Fidelity, does it take place entirely in that music store?
Well,
the production?
We know it goes back and forth. It begins in a kind of limbo space that's Rob's imagination, and we transition to the record store, and we go in and out of the record store. The set is very cool. It's by my colleague Mark Lohman, and has a lot of moving pieces, and it's really fun to watch these shifts happen. I should say that virtually every member of our department is involved in this show. It's a complex physical show, and so just about everybody is involved. So the show goes back and forth, and a lot of the scenes happen in Rob's mind. So he has some hilarious fantasies, and he conjures all sorts of ex-girlfriends. There's a Greek chorus of ex-girlfriends that continue. Like, sometimes they're on his side. Sometimes they're on his ex-girlfriend's side. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, you talked a little bit about the brief run that the show had on Broadway when it first came out, and mm-hmm. that even this show has kind of developed a cult following a little bit in
yeah,
its
I
life
run
as a
into
musical.
People that say, oh, you're doing High Fidelity. Oh, when is it? Can we come? And I said, well, you have to come to Peoria, you know. So
that's right.
So it's only happening here. I don't know why it wasn't more successful. I really don't know. There's a chapter on this musical in a book by a gentleman whose name I unfortunately don't recall, who's a music theater scholar. And he feels that the Broadway production mocked the music and that treated the show as a kind of a Seinfeld for the late 90s. And I don't know. I didn't see it. So I can't say. But it's possible. It's possible. I think it has more to do with what else was playing in that Broadway season, because the people who were in it were pretty well known, and some great singers did it on Broadway. So,
So what made this a good fit for the Bradley Theater Department? The fact that the characters were a little younger and more accessible to the students, or the fact that the music is maybe a little more contemporary?
Frankly, for me, it's largely about attracting Bradley students and faculty to our shows. For me, our primary audience is the Bradley community. It wasn't always that way. With the theater department, there was a strong subscribership from the community for years, and that, like most theater subscription audiences, has really changed. And I try to program shows that I think are of historical, theatrical importance. We cover a range of genres. But when it comes to the musical, which we do every year, we put so much energy and resources into it that to have people not come for one reason or another is heartbreaking. So with last year with Spring Awakening, this year with High Fidelity, we're trying to come up with shows that we think our student audiences are really going to dig. And so that seems to be more in the vein of rock and roll musicals for right now.
And when you talk about broad appeal for your audiences, I just have to read this quote. This was from Entertainment Weekly when the show first came out on Broadway. They said, High Fidelity is the unique show that charms both your drinking buddy and your mother. Would you agree?
Well, my mother would have loved it. There's some rough language, and so the drinking buddies for sure. Most of the mothers of our students who have come to see it love it. So, yeah, that's pretty apt.
Scott Kanoff is directing Bradley Theater's production of the musical High Fidelity. Performances continue tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday at the Hartman Center on the Bradley campus. Scott, break a leg.
Thanks so much.
Also this week, the Peoria Art Guild proudly presents In Good Company, recent work by Peoria women artists. Participating artists include Kathy Crawford, Susan Chakowski, Don Gettler, Sarah Nesbitt, and more. The exhibit runs through November 4th at the Peoria Art Guild.
And Many Lights Theater is opening its production of The Glass Menagerie by Tennessee Williams. The show runs tonight and tomorrow and again next Saturday and Sunday. Those performances are at the First Congregational United Church of Christ in Canton.
Out and About is a production of Peoria Public Radio and Arts Partners of Central Illinois. Each week, we connect you to the arts community by talking with local arts leaders and performers.
Our producer is Sarah Doss. You can listen to an extended version of this interview by going to our website, peoriapublicradio.org. I'm Nathan Irwin, and this is Out and About. Our producer is Sarah Doss. You can learn more about Peoria Public Radio when you visit our website, peoriapublicradio.org. I'm Nathan Irwin, and this is Out and About.